The book of Ruth deals with difficult times and tragedies, and no doubt at all that our community is familiar with that this morning. But as I was thinking about the book of Ruth in chapter 2, verses 1 through 17, what we're going to look at today, or 1 through 16, 17, right in that area. As you're turning there, I kind of thought about Naomi and Ruth. Because in chapter 1, they have a very difficult time, don't they? We're not going to go over that today. But in a lot of ways, I feel like they need to have a good day, right? Have a good day. You ever thought, how can I have a good day? I was just interested in this week, and as I was looking through the internet, there is a lot out there on how to have a good day. And everyone wakes up wanting to have a good day, right? Have you ever woken up and said, you know what? I just think I'm in the mood for a bad day. Sometimes those people wake up on the wrong side of the bed. Maybe that's what they were thinking. But for the most part, we like to have a good day. So I did some research and everything and found this one website. I think it was haveagoodday.com. And it listed out recommendations on having a good day. Here's a few of them. Enjoy a warm beverage, right? Read a few pages of a book. Go for a light walk. Try some light stretching or yoga. Do some breathing exercises. Maybe even journal. Find a journal to write some of your thoughts in. Make and enjoy a wholesome breakfast. And that does not include cereal. Although I call that a wholesome breakfast in my house. Or play some enjoyable music. There's a lot out there actually on trying to understand how to have a good day. And these are a few of the steps. But interesting enough, although Naomi and Ruth, they need a good day, these are none of the steps that they take. We're going to see in our story today that although things have looked bleak for Naomi and Ruth, they will begin to see the favor of God in their life. They will begin to have a good day. And that's what we need in our lives. There's so much pain, so much hurt in the world, so much dysfunction, so much brokenness in and of myself and in and of you that we need to be able to recognize and see the favor of God in our lives. Because that's what Naomi and Ruth are going to see today. It's Ruth. We'll see Naomi's response to the favor next week. But this week, we're going to see Ruth begin to see and experience the very favor of God in her life. Now, the current crisis is this. The current crisis is that they are nearly impossible to have a job. Remember our ladies today, they don't have husbands. They are widowed, and one is actually quite older, and they don't have any kids themselves. It is nearly impossible for them to even get a job, even though they have traveled back to their home, that being in Bethlehem. They are also poverty stricken. Our two ladies are homeless. They are trying to survive, trying to find any means possible by which they can have shelter and food. They have no husbands and they have no sons. Thus, they have no provision, because back in this context and in this culture, protection and provision came through the husband, or it comes through a male. Naomi herself is bitter, and Ruth is an immigrant living in a foreign land. This is the crisis at hand, but this is where we find Ruth now in chapter 2. Let's look at chapter 2. Looking at the first few verses here, we're going to look at verses 1 through 3. It says, now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Now, just stop right there. Verse 1 is giving you insight as to where the story is going, right? It's just a side note of the narrative, and it's an introduction to this character, Boaz. And so it gives you a little bit of explanation as to who he is and his character. Look at his character. He is a worthy man. There were many other translations like worthy man or a man of standing or a man of valor. This is a man that is known in the community for being a good and upright person. Now, that's just your introduction to Boaz. That's verse 1. And now then it's going to focus on Ruth, and we'll see Boaz then introduced into the story that Ruth is going through. So now look at verse 2. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. So what does Ruth decide to do? She decides to go out and work. Interesting enough, on the list on how to have a good day, did you see work anywhere on that list, right? The world's idea is very different from what we see in Scripture. She goes out to work. Ruth is saying, "I'm going to go and I'm going to glean behind the reapers. I'm going to glean behind the harvesters." If you remember at the end of chapter 1, what time of year was it? Remember? It was the barley harvest. There is a hope on the horizon and there is a barley harvest happening. And now Ruth knows that. Now Ruth says, "You know what? We need food. We got to have something to eat or we will die." And so she says, "I'm going to go out into the fields and I'm going to glean what I can." Now, what does this look like? She gleans among the ears of the grain. What is that? This is not something people do today, right? This is not a common practice in our culture. I was raised on a farm. It was mostly cattle, but we had a few tractors here and there. Honestly, tractors do all the work. And we drive them. But back in this context, you would have people called reapers or harvesters. And if you owned a field and you wanted to harvest the field, they would go through the field with baskets and they would put the harvest in the baskets. That's how this would happen. And so as the reapers went along and as the harvesters would walk the field doing their job, they would sometimes miss things. And sometimes things would fall out of their basket. But they were, and we're going to get into this in a second, by the Torah, by the law, they were supposed to keep going and not go back for what they had dropped. And so Ruth knows this. So Ruth says, "You know what? I'm going to go out, I'm going to find a field, and I'm going to walk the field getting any kind of scraps that I can get." That's Ruth. That's the situation we have here. She's going about picking up what is missed. Now, interesting enough, this is in our Old Testament. This is actually in the law. Look at Deuteronomy 24:19. It'll be on our screens, and you can just write a note there in your notes or in the Bible. But verse 19 in the law says, "When you reap your harvest in your field and forest a sheaf in the field, you shall not," what? "You shall not go back to get it. It shall be for who? It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands." They're not to go back and get those extra things, because they are for who? The fatherless, the widow, and the sojourner. Do you think Naomi and Ruth qualify? Yeah. They meet multiple qualifications of this. They are widows. They are sojourners. Ruth herself is a sojourner, and Naomi has come back to her homeland. They more than qualify for what the law and the Torah have actually set out for Israelites to do. This is repeated a little bit more detailed in Leviticus 19, 9 through 10. It says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge." They were commanded to leave the edges. "Neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest," right? You're not to go back a second time and make sure you pick up all the leftovers. Instead, verse 10, "And you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for who? For the poor and the sojourner. I am the Lord your God." You are to leave them for the poor. You are to leave them for the immigrant. You are to leave them for those who need it. It says written into the law. Ruth begins to see God's favor. Ruth begins to understand and experience that God is still with her and that God is still for her. Even though things looked bleak, God is still there providing. This teaches us this: activity precedes favor in God's providence. It's our first blank in our notes today, is that activity precedes favor in God's providence. As I was studying this passage, I noticed that yes, Ruth experiences God's favor, but she wasn't sitting around waiting for it, right? Oftentimes we think in our minds, that's what we need to do. We need to just sit down and maybe read your Bible and pray, which, by the way, those things can be good things, but she is active, right? She goes out and she says, I'm going to work. I'm going to do something in hopes that I find favor. See, oftentimes we think that work in and of itself is a bad thing. We think work is a result of the fall back in Genesis. But the reality is, before sin entered our world, God commands Adam and Eve to what? To take care of the garden. They're commanded to work. Work is a good thing because our God is a creator. And when we step into that role of work and creation, we reflect the very nature of God. We are then mirroring who our creator is by doing work and doing it well. Activity precedes favor in God's providence. Those two things go hand in hand. Interesting enough, look at the verse again. In verse 3, it's a very interesting part. About halfway through, it says, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. Isn't that interesting that the author here uses the word happened? See, this is that balance between the work that Ruth is doing and God's providence. The author is actually using this idea of happened because to the reader, they know that it's just kind of hyperbole. It's just kind of overstating the case. It's trying to get our attention that, oh yeah, she just so happened to go there. No, no, no. It's the opposite. It's emphasis of the opposite, which is God's providence. Which is God's providence. See, behind our happenings are God's ordainings. Behind our happenings are God's ordainings. Here's three ways in which God works. Now, these aren't in your notes, but you can just write notes out to the side here. Here's three ways real quick that God works with us. Number one, God works with us. Mark 16:20. And they went out and preached everywhere while the Lord worked with them. Do you see both of those things happening at the same time? And confirmed the message by accompanying signs. That's Mark. God works with us. God works in us as well. Philippians 2:12-13. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. So there on the one side, we are told to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. And then verse 13, for it is God who works in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. God works in us. And finally, God works for us. Romans 8:28. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good. For those who are called according to his purpose, God works for us as well. Thinking of how God calls us into an active faith, and God calls us into activity, an activity which precedes the favor of God, I'm often reminded of a man on a roof, the story, really, of a man that was on a roof during a storm and a flood. Have you heard this story? A man is caught then in a flood, waiting on his roof, and he's praying to God. God, save me. God, save me. God, save me. And he's waiting, and he's waiting, and he's waiting. And as he waits, a boat comes by. And the boat says, hey, can we help? Jump on in. He says, no, no thank you. I'm waiting for God to save me. And then later on, a helicopter comes by and lends down a rope and says, we would love to help you and save you. He says, no thanks. I'm waiting on God to save me. And then a raft came by and said, how can we help? Get in the raft. He says, no thanks. I'm waiting for God to save me. Well, sadly, the flood gets him and he dies. And when he goes to heaven, he asks God, he says, God, I asked you to save me. Why didn't you do anything? He says, what are you talking about? I sent you a boat. I sent you a helicopter and I sent you a raft. It was all there for you. sometimes in looking to find the favor of God in our lives, don't get caught just waiting on something to happen. Be like Ruth and get after doing something. Get after your survival and get after finding God's favor ultimately. I like Kenneth Seaway. He's a professor at Biola University. In his commentary here, he says this. He says, "We please God neither by recklessness nor by cowardice. Once we have sought for a responsible and faithful course." And this is what Ruth is doing. She is seeking after a responsible and faithful course by gleaning in the fields. Let's go on and look at verse 4. Verse 4 continues the story here. And we'll actually introduce now more this character who is called Boaz. Verse 4. It says, "And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.' And they answered, 'The Lord bless you.'" By the way, a side study on this is he's a great employer. If you own a business, take some lessons from Boaz. He shows up and says, "How are you doing?" And I think he truly means it because he says, "The Lord bless you." Then verse 5, "Then Boaz said to his young man, 'Who is in charge of the reapers? Whose young woman is this?'" Who's he taking notice of? He's taking notice of Ruth. "And the servant who was," verse 6, "And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, 'She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." So she came and she continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." It's interesting that Ruth has a reputation already, right? You have to imagine an immigrant, a foreigner from Moab, a country that isn't even, the people there aren't even allowed to go to church. That's the kind of reputation that Moab has. This doesn't happen every day in this community. Having a Moab, an immigrant like Ruth, come and begin to live with these people, this doesn't happen every day. So there's a reputation here. Why is she having to ask? I thought too was an interesting question. Why is she having to ask to glean? Isn't it in the law? Right? Isn't it in the Torah? That actually implies for us that even though the law, it was telling them, the harvesters, that they should not go back and pick up and let the poor glean, the reality is it probably wasn't happening, right? Probably wasn't happening. That's why she has to ask for permission. That's why she has to ask for permission. How do we find favor? Because Ruth is seeing the favor of God in her life. God's favor begins with the Lord's initiative. This is what this teaches us. Who found who? It's a great question. Who found who? See, for Ruth, she just happens to come into Boaz's field. Ruth is not seeking Boaz at all. Boaz begins to take notice of Ruth. It's the other way around. And that's the way it is with salvation. It's the Lord that pursues us. It is the Lord that pursues us and draws our heart into a relationship with his Son, Jesus Christ. Think of 1 John 4:19. "This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him." See, one thing that's interesting when you study the book of Ruth or when you study any narrative, you see a lot of these relationships happening, right? And when you read about these relationships and when we begin to see the relationship that Boaz has with Ruth, it teaches us how our God loves us. It teaches us how our Father loves us and how our Father pursues us. Another passage to look at is Romans. Romans 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. It's actually a pretty big passage that we can look at here. This is what Romans 6 says. And look, and let's pay attention to all the different areas in which I highlighted yellow. Because let's really face it. In no way at all do we earn God's favor. In no way at all are we the one that are initiating the pursuit with God. Verse 6, for while we were still weak, while we were weak at that time, Christ died for the ungodly. You didn't get strong enough. You didn't get wise enough. You didn't read the Bible enough. You didn't go to church enough to where suddenly God says, I want to save you. No, we were weak. Am I to add my own commentary? Pathetic. We were weak and pathetic apart from God's grace. Look at verse 7. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare to even die. Speaking of Christ's ultimate death for us. But verse 8. But God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. There's no getting right with God prior to his grace. You have to know the peace and the grace that comes through knowing Christ before you experience life transformation. You weren't suddenly a good person. You can't do enough good works in order to suddenly impress God. This is not what Ruth does, right? Ruth is not trying to do enough good works in order to find the favor that she needs with Boaz. Boaz looks out and says, you know what? I want to have favor on you. Anyway, Paul continues to go on here. He says, verse 9, since therefore we have now been justified by his blood, much more shall we be saved from him, from the wrath of God. Verse 10, for while we were what? We were enemies. While we were enemies, he reconciled us. It's a great reminder to us that God's favor begins with the Lord's initiative, and it is his work in you. This is what we see with Boaz and Ruth as well in their relationship. Let's go on. Look at verse 8. This favor continues in this passage. Verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter. By the way, look at the care he has. My daughter. Not immigrant, right? Not person that I wish that wasn't here. My daughter. That's family-like language. That's how much he cares. Then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, do not go and glean in another field or leave this one, right? Stay here. Stay where I am. I'm going to meet your needs. But keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? You can imagine in this day and age where the harvesters and those who owned farms were not very friendly to those who came and reaped behind them. I imagine there were many instances where people were taken advantage of because they were doing what they thought they could do according to the law. But oftentimes, maybe as a business owner, they want all the profits. Continuing on in the verse though, have I not charged the young men not to touch you, right? They're not to touch you. And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. Isn't that amazing? She's not even having to draw it herself. The employers are drawing it, the water. Then she fell on her face. Very, very interesting point here. She fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes? There's our word favor. That you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner. Here Boaz is giving more instruction, isn't she? Isn't he? Boaz continues to give more instructions that leans into the things that benefit Ruth. Now, the first thing I like to notice here is her response. Ruth is experiencing all this favor. And look at the response that she has in verse 10. Why have I found favor? What am I here doing? Then she fell down, face down, bowed to the ground. Our response to God's grace in our lives, our response to his favor, our response to his mercy can only and should be worship. Not, yeah, you know, I expected you to do that. That's arrogance. All right? Not, hey, God, you kind of owe it to me because I read my Bible a bunch this week, right? That's not, you know, that's the kind of response that the world teaches us that we should have. No, instead, she recognizes who she is. She recognizes her spiritual bankruptcy. See, not only is Ruth very, very poor and living in poverty and living as an immigrant, she is economically bankrupt, she is socially bankrupt, and she is spiritually bankrupt. And she understands that, and she sees that. And this small favor that she sees here from Boaz responds with worship. I bow down. And in fact, I bow down to such an extent that I have to even ask the question, why? Ultimately, why? God's favor, though, another truth of this text, God's favor meets our needs. Did you see that in the text? And not only should we focus on her response, but God's favor meets our needs. Boaz is meeting Ruth's needs. Think of all the different aspects that we have here. Look at the needs that are being met. Keep close to my young women. She needs what? She needs community. Because you realize she's out there by herself. That's very scary. That's very even dangerous for her. But she says, you know what? Boaz says, you know what? I'm going to let you stay with my female workers. I'm going to let you be with them. I'm going to give you people to talk to. I'm going to give you community. I'm going to give you friends. I'm going to give you relationships. So that you're not alone in this world. So that you're not alone in this community. Meets the needs. The young men are not to touch you. She needs protection. She needs protection. And go and drink of the water, right? This was very interesting when I looked at this. Boaz is trying to help her to meet those basic necessities, those basic needs of water. Isn't that interesting? God's favor ultimately meets our needs. And sometimes it's hard for us to see, isn't it? Sometimes it's hard for us to see in some of the things that we go through of how God is meeting our needs. And what this encourages us is to look and find where God is meeting those needs. Because God will meet those needs. Maybe it'll be through a community. Maybe it'll be through someone giving you what you need and some of the basic necessities. Ultimately, God's favor meets our needs. God's favor meets our needs. Let's recap here for just a second. How are we to see God's favor? How can we have a good day, right? How can we see God's favor in our lives? One, recognize our activity, right? That we just don't sit back and do nothing. We see that God is the initiator of the relationship and that ultimately God's favor meets our needs. And at this point, I think Ruth is having a good day. What do you think? She's doing all right. She's having a much better day than yesterday, most likely. But this continues to go. Because if you stopped right there, like you got a pretty good story going on. But even more happens. And even more, there's even more that Boaz and Ruth, and there's even more favor that we see in this relationship. So look at verse 11. Verse 11 through 13. But Boaz answered her, right? All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of her husband. Look at this knowledge that is in the community of what Ruth has done. Since the death of your husband had been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know. This is her reputation in the community already. Verse 12, the Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward by giving you, be given you by the Lord and the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. And then verse 13, then she said, I have found favor in the eyes of my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. Why has favor been found with Boaz? It is because of what she did and the sacrifice that she made in leaving her family. That's all the way back to chapter 1, right? This sacrifice that she made to continue to care for Ruth or to continue to care for Naomi, Ruth cares for Naomi and commits all the way to the point that she will be buried where Naomi is buried. That is the deep commitment that Ruth has made. And this story has gotten out all the way to Boaz. And Boaz says, you know what? Here's why I'm finding favors, because what the Lord has done through you. Please realize that that is not because of the works of Ruth. It is because of what God is doing through Ruth. That's where we see favor. That's where we see the favor of Boaz. And in this interesting too, she is certainly flipping the stereotype of her people, isn't she? Her people are known for not being good people. They're not allowed in the church. They don't even want to talk, and they're on the other side of the sea. And look at their reputation. Look what that Ruth is known for. She's known for sacrifice and leaving. This reminds us actually of Genesis 2:24. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Now, one thing I want to point out is verse 12. We're going to highlight verse 12 real big on the screen here. Verse 12. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. It's a real small part of the verse, but the idea that you go under the wings of your Creator is His love and protection over our lives. Psalm 36:7, how precious is your steadfast love, O God. The children of mankind take refuge in the shadow of your wings. Matthew 23:37, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. See, this is the Lord asking us to see that God's favor protects and cares. God's favor protects and cares. Look at the generosity of Boaz. Boaz was a kind man. He was friendly to Ruth. He made provisions for her to glean close to the reapers. He orders a handful or purposely dropped for her gleanings. He will invite her ultimately to have a meal. We're going to look at that next week. He makes provision and protection for her. God's favor protects and cares. This is the relationship that we see, right, with Boaz and Ruth. And it's true of our relationship with our Father and us. One time I was driving in Indiana, and I had a moment of getting to find that protection and care. Because as I drove down the road one morning, it had snowed the night before. This is just a couple of years ago. It had snowed the night before, and everything seemed okay. And I'm driving along the road, and they do a lot of work on the roads up there. Usually the roads are absolutely fine. No big deal. Nothing to be worried about. But as I'm driving down the road, and I have Parker, my youngest son, in the back, we're driving down the road, and I look over, and I see a car that had kind of gone off the road and was in the ditch. And I thought, wow, that really stinks. And about 3 seconds after that, I hit the same black ice as the person in the car hit. And my truck, I drive a four-door truck, only rear-wheel drive, so this is not made for the ice. My truck started fishtailing, right? I've never experienced this ever in my life. My truck started fishtailing, absolute loss of control. And you just try to manage it as best as you can. And I went into someone's driveway and came about 2 feet from a telephone pole, like right in the middle, like it was that close. And in all of this, if you've ever experienced something like this or experienced an accident, what is your first response? My first response is always, is my son okay? Are you okay? I'll be okay, right? I'm the adult. I'm the older one. Is my son okay? This would always happen with me and my dad driving as well. We had a regular truck, not one of these four-door things. This is long before four-door trucks existed. So I was always in the passenger seat. And if he had to slam on his brakes, what was the first thing that your dad does or even your mom does when they slam on the brakes? Like, it almost hurts half the time, but they hit you. Like, they stop you from going forward. And this is long before airbags too, you know. So your only protection in the car is your mama or your daddy's arm. That's it. This is the kind of response that our Father has for us. One of extreme protection and extreme care for me and you. He protects and he cares. And he protects and he cares much better than I ever could for my own family, right? So lean into that favor today as you think about where God's favor is in your life. Now let's wrap up the last few verses here. Look into verse 14 through 17. It says this. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." Isn't that amazing? I'm sorry, I got to stop right there. She's getting invited to a meal, right? With the business owner and all the employees. Like, hold on, my day didn't start off like this. I hoped to get a little bit of food, and now I'm having a meal with the business owner. It's amazing. So she sat beside the reapers, right? She sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. I got to imagine, I couldn't find anything in the commentaries, but maybe that's the best food available in this area, you know? Here's the roasted grain. Here's your T-bone steak. You know, we might think of it that way. Something extremely good. And she ate until she was what? Until she was satisfied. And she had some left over. Isn't that amazing? The Lord provides abundantly more than we could ever expect. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, here's more instructions from Boaz. Let her glean among the sheaves. It's an even better place. It's a more prosperous place where she's going to be able to have even more. Boaz instructed his young men, let her glean among the sheaves and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean. And do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned. And it was about an ephah of barley. Now just going back real quick to verse 16, right? And also pull out some bundles for her to leave. Isn't that interesting? Could you imagine being one of the reapers and the workers? Like, I've worked hard. I've got my bundles here. And like, I'm good. I'm like, I'm told to like, just kind of throw it backwards. Okay. This is the kind of blessing and favor that Ruth is experiencing. God's favor provides abundantly. God's favor provides abundantly. Now, it may not be in material possessions. It may not always be in food. But maybe it's in the way that you have mental thinking, right? Maybe it's in the way of your relationships that you have. There's just so many ways and in so many areas where we see God's abundant provision. And when we even look at this text, Ruth herself is what? Ruth is satisfied. I would underline that word satisfied. Ruth herself is satisfied. Are we satisfied with what the Lord has given us? Are we satisfied with the favor that we have with our Lord? Now, at the very end here is an interesting word. And sometimes I'm not even sure if I'm saying it the right way. But an ephah of barley or an epiph of barley. What is that? Anyone else ask that question as you kind of read through this text with me? What is that? I am not an agricultural guru. I don't know what this is. I had to go research it and look it up, right? Well, this is apparently a lot of barley. Okay, this is about as much barley as you can humanly carry. Ephah is a measurement, okay? And so this measurement equates to about 5 to 6 gallons of our world and our measurements. 5 to 6 gallons. Commentators say it was around 40 pounds. So you can imagine this is how much she is carrying. But think of this. This is enough barley to get her and Naomi through about 2 weeks worth of food. 2 weeks worth of food. Now, in my mind, when I hear 2 weeks worth of food, I often think of food because I think of the cost of my own groceries. And so I kind of started thinking, like, how much does it cost me and my family for about 2 weeks of groceries? And I started thinking about that number. I'm like, well, that's actually a lot in this day and age. But how much would this have been for her? For just two people. Let's think about two people today. How much does it cost two people to survive and eat? Cost about $19 maybe. I was trying a rough estimate here. $19, $20 per person. So then we're about $38 to $40 for one day. So if Ruth has gotten 2 weeks worth of food, I think this is about $500 worth of food in our day, in our time. She worked one day and she got like $500 worth. Let's think about that. One day's worth at $500. Do you know how much that comes out to per year? $127,680. In my mindset. I don't know if this is right. This is totally me just thinking and guessing at the amount of this, of what this is. But I think it's somewhere in this ballpark. The barley harvest season is 7 weeks long. It's only 7 weeks long. So can you imagine if Ruth got to do this every single day that she's supposed to do it, not on the Sabbath, but all the other days, if she does this every single day and she gets this much barley for her and Naomi, it's going to feed them for the next year. And it is equivalent to doing about $127,000 worth of work in 7 weeks. Just in that little phrase, an epiph of barley, we see that God's favor provides abundantly. I think the abundance that I have missed in studying this passage has been a lot for me. So digging into this week and thinking about really how much this is for her, it is incredible. And it's incredible how much God provides for us abundantly. This is what it looks like for Ruth to have a good day. She begins to see the favor of God. She sets out to work hard. Someone takes notice of her, and she has the initiative of Boaz. She has her needs met. She experiences protection and care. And then at the very end, she has this overabundance of blessing in her life. And that teaches us about our relationship with our Father and our God, and how God looks to bless us and to see you walk faithfully with Him as you serve Christ. I leave us with this one last kind of imperative, a go do, so to speak. And that is this: be mindful of God's favor this week. Be mindful of God's favor this week. And that's not easy to do, is it? Be mindful of God's favor, even in light of the tragedies that are in the world.